such a tragedy compared to the fact that in other parts of the same city within a different zip code, you can get 30 more birthdays. And like, that's what we need to figure out.
I'm Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick, founder of Grapevine Health and your host of the Grapevine Health Podcast, a podcast highlighting stories, health insights, and experiences of community members. We started this podcast because too often discussions and decision-making about health and the healthcare system don't include perspectives from the people we serve. So listeners, if you have a personal story or an experience from working in the community or on the front lines of healthcare, contact us and we might have you on the show. This week, I'm talking to Kimberly Dowdell, an architect in Detroit and Chicago, who thinks a lot about the connection between where you live and your health outcomes. Hello, Kim. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Dr. Lisa?
Good. Thanks for being here. Introduce yourself and tell people what you do.
Sure. I've been an architect for about 15 years now, but my journey into architecture started when I was just 11 years old. So as a little kid, I saw downtown Detroit as a place of a lot of potential, but just, you know, lots of really old, beautiful boarded up buildings that had clearly gone through disinvestment. And, you know, at that age, I didn't know what disinvestment meant. I learned that later on in college, but I knew that something felt off about it. And so I learned about what an architect did in a middle school art class. And I was like, okay, well, if architects work on buildings, then I'll become an architect. I'll work on the buildings that I see downtown that need to get reactivated. And that'll make everything better. So I originally actually, as a little kid, wanted to be a doctor. And because I wanted to help people. And then I sort of got the idea about being an architect so I could help people via buildings. And so that's kind of been my thing for quite some time. So,
wow, so I guess in some way you are a doctor. You're a doctor of buildings.
In a way, yeah. So, but, you know, or in other words, an architect.
What I would love to hear your perspective on, I know you spent some time thinking about the intersection of health and neighborhoods or where people live. Tell us about that. What have you been doing in that space?
Yeah, I mean, so more recently, I've really just been giving a lot of thought to some of the disparities that we've seen, especially play out with the coronavirus, but even before in places like Chicago, which is where I live, in certain neighborhoods, which are predominantly white, the life expectancy is 90 years on average. And then other areas in, you know, the south side of Chicago, which is predominantly black, the average life expectancy is 60 years. And that's just such a jaw-dropping statistic. It is. And so I've been so bothered by that, especially when I saw an actual map that showed the different colors and the numbers. And I was like, all right, this is a problem. And I think, you know, there are a lot of different disciplines that need to be working on it, policymakers, you know, the medical professionals. But I think there's also a role for designers in that. So designers, meaning architects, planners, you know, people who are involved in the built environment. Because there are implications, you know, in terms of health outcomes and life expectancy as it relates to people's, you know, the buildings that they live in, their access to public space, even things like access to public transit in the urban context. You know, there are pollutants in certain neighborhoods and less so in other neighborhoods. And so how do we sort of take a look at all of these things together and sort of break down the silos between the different professions and just solve that problem? Like, how do we get more birthdays? Like, that's kind of the call to action. Like,
how do we get more
birthdays?
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it's like, I mean, passing away at 60 years old just feels, you know, on average, it just feels like such a tragedy compared to the fact that in other parts of the same city within a different zip code, you can get 30 more birthdays. And like, that's what we need to figure out. As a society.
That's incredible. Wow. So let's go back to something you said. You were looking at the maps, and it was the maps that sort of gave you an aha moment. Describe that for us. What did you see when you looked at the maps?
I mean, it really just embodied what racism has done. You know, it has impacted the way that people, you know, live their lives, specifically, you know, looking at things like policies from, you know, the middle of the 20th century that include redlining and restrictive covenants and things of that nature, which are related to real estate and planning and design, such that people, you know, who look like us, African-Americans, or Black people more broadly, could not live in certain areas, either by law or because they couldn't get, you know, mortgages in particular areas or whatever. And that has translated into a lot of people who look like each other living in certain areas. And that translates into, you know, frankly, just some places being less empowered to fight back. So, for example, this happens in a lot of American cities where highways would run through neighborhoods, and they were almost exclusively African American. And it's not just, you know, people losing their property and having to, you know, move and, you know, kind of ripping apart that community, which has psychological impact as well as physical impacts, but the emissions from those cars that are driving up and down those highways, that also has an impact. And so all these things together have been compounding for years and years and years. And I mean, those are just a few examples of the things that, you know, Black communities in particular struggle with. And so when I saw that map, it this is the result of
decades. But what did you see on the map? That's what I'm trying to understand. So if someone picks up a map, like, what is it on that map? Can you describe the visual that helps people understand this loss of 30 years you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So the map is actually in a Time Magazine article from 2019. And it was done by Jamie Ducharme and Elijah Wolfson. And essentially it's almost like a heat map. And so the beige areas at the top of the map, which is the north side of Chicago, are the areas that represent 90 years of life expectancy on average. And then as you get to the west side of Chicago and the south side of Chicago, so as you basically go down the map, it gets more red. And so you see this like very visually compelling argument for why we as a society need to fix these disparities. So the colors pop. And the more color there is, the worse the outcomes are. And it's like, that's very troublesome.
And have you noticed anything, I would say, that gets your attention during the pandemic? Has there been any insight along these lines?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as the pandemic started, we, you know, and data started to be collected around, you know, who was contracting the virus, you know, early on, who was dying from the virus. It was predominantly the more red areas on that map that I'm talking about, but it correlates to Black and brown communities especially. And it just, you know, because, and as you know, as a doctor, the coronavirus really attacks, you know, bodies that, well, I mean, it attacks everyone that it you know, hosts within, but then those who are not as healthy because of, you know, these sort of longer term conditions, whether it be asthma or diabetes or just, I mean, any number of things that kind of contribute to a body's weathering, the coronavirus really has a very deadly impact. And so more people of color died on average than white people. And that translated into where these sort of more red parts are on the map.
So I want to pivot a little bit and just talk about the healthcare system in general. We talk a lot about health system transformation and the need to close these disparity gaps you mentioned.
Right.
And one of the latest areas of focus is what we're calling social determinants of health. Have you heard of this term?
You know, I have heard of social determinants of health. Within the last year, it's sort of a buzzword or buzz term that's been floated around, at least in my my field. But frankly, it's been around for a while, just maybe not necessarily in those exact terms. You know, it's not new to us that we need to figure out, you know, how to increase economic opportunities within, you know, less fortunate communities. You know, we have to figure out, you know, access to healthy and safe foods. Like, I mean, there's so many things that we've been, you know, as a community, like the Black community has been struggling with, knowing to some extent the answers, but necessarily having the resources to actualize them. And so it seems like more recently a group of very educated folks got together and made this list, and they're like, all right, this is what you do. We're like, all right, cool. But like, we already kind of knew this. However, where are the resources to make this all a reality? And so, so yes, I've heard of it. Again, the resources to get into our communities so they can be healthier. Like, those are the real determinants, like where are the resources?
And so what do you think about this notion that social determinants of health determine a person's health outcome? Do you talk about this in your field?
I mean, in my field, we're focused mostly on the neighborhood and built environment aspect of things. And so specifically, we get into a little bit more detail about, you know, the toxic environments that, that kind of tend to be located in communities of color. Again, we talk about access to parks and open space, proximity to public transit, opportunities for adaptive reuse. So taking existing buildings, which are the most sustainable buildings because they're already there, and reusing them for new purposes. We also talk about the prevalence of food deserts. So in other words, you know, not having access to healthy and fresh, you know, fruits and vegetables and other foods within a neighborhood, like having to get in the car and drive somewhere else is a problem. And so how do we deal with that? And then at the building scale, you know, how do we look at, you know, the installation of more efficient building systems so people aren't spending all their money on, you know, lights and gas when if they had better building systems, they could actually, you know, spend less money and have more money for food and medicine and other stuff like that. And also proper maintenance of buildings so that, you know, again, there are cost savings on the, on the building side. And then zooming out a little bit from that, just overall crime and safety, like how can we design for more, you know, eyes on the streets so that there's a bit more natural surveillance so that, you know, the proliferation of crime in certain areas, you know, starts to get contained. So, I mean, there are a lot of different levers that designers and developers and real estate people can pull. We just have to like work together and be coordinated about it. But then the other piece, which is kind of an intersection of what you do and what I do, is, you know, how do we help provide access to quality healthcare facilities that are, you know, embedded within neighborhoods so that people aren't necessarily going to hospitals. And there's some, you know, there's some hesitation within communities of color to actually go to large hospitals because of the cost associated, or just, you know, frankly, people are not treated very well in some contexts. So I think there's some work to be done about, you know, building more community scale, accessible, friendly, very competent places that can meet people's healthcare needs, you know, near where they live.
So it sounds like we think about a lot of the same things. I'm wondering, when is the last time you were invited into the health sector to sit down at the table and design things with people working on a health solution?
Well, so I haven't personally been invited, but
ever?
Personally, no, because I'm a generalist, and so I've had the privilege of working on a lot of different types of projects. I just haven't personally worked on a healthcare project, although I work for a very large firm, HOK, which has a healthcare practice. And so our healthcare, you know, architects, you know, are involved with, you know, many different major and also smaller scale health systems across the country, even the world, frankly. But I haven't sort of had those conversations, particularly at the community, you know, at the community level, in communities of color. But I love to have that conversation because, as you can tell, I'm very passionate about this notion of designing for more birthdays and design. Well, I call it design for life. There are conversations with, you know, large healthcare hospital systems that, you know, need these, you know, huge facilities to be designed. And that's important work. And so there are folks within my firm that have done that work. Like, I've personally worked on, corporate office buildings. I've worked on an airport. I've, you know, a number of different things that are not healthcare, but large scale and complex. And so I think it'd be great to kind of, you know, I personally have an interest in doing some of this other work, but not even necessarily at the huge hospital scale, but, you know, how do we get into these communities that really, really need access to this quality healthcare? and start to provide solutions. So I think there are conversations to be had there. I mean, so my firm we actually have a chief medical officer, and we have a number of people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, his name is Dr.
Is your chief medical officer thinking about these things?
Absolutely.
That was the reason for my question, because I know architects might be at the table to design buildings or build hospitals, but the issues you're talking about, the things you're passionate about, those are the issues I think are important to raise in the boardrooms, in the C-suites, in these conversations.
Yeah, absolutely. So our chief medical officer, Dr. Andrew Ibrahim, he's very much on board with these conversations. You know, he is working at a larger scale than the community scale, but we actually, you know, we need, as a firm, need to get invited to more of these conversations where people assume like, oh, you guys just work on these huge, you know, $200 million projects. So, you know, maybe this is too small potatoes for you, but, you know, I want people to know like, no, this is exactly where we need to be, because we can take the level of complexity involved with these large projects and use that expertise to actually help, you know, smaller scale projects to be successful.
What do we need to do to get your voice at the table to help us get to more birthdays in some of these communities that are red on the map?
Just invite me. Invite Dr. Ibrahim and other experts within, you know, not just our firm, but, you know, throughout the design and planning industry, because, you know, we do deal with these things and coming to it from a slightly different perspective. But I think the extent to which we can, again, break down silos and start having these interdisciplinary conversations, I think that's going to help to meet some of these needs. And then the other aspect, which goes back to our training and graduate school together, you know, how do we get the different sectors to work together? So the private sector, the public sector, the not-for-profit sector, you know, I think that's another area where there's just more work to be done. And so creating just more interdisciplinary and multi-sector collaboration will be part of the solution to solving a very, very complex set of issues.
Yeah. So my last question, I'm going to ask you to prioritize and choose. You raised some very heavy, difficult, complex issues: security, food deserts, environment. If you had to pick one issue to tackle first, what would it be and why?
Just one, Dr. Lisa? Come on. Oh, gosh. Well, there's a saying that if everything is important, then nothing is important. So prioritization is a good thing. Oh, gosh. I feel like I'm on Jeopardy. Like, they're all so important. But if I had to pick one, I think that if we, and so this, so I'm going to pick one, but it's going to have tentacles into multiple of them. Is that fair? Can we do that? I think that we have to build a stronger ecosystem around food. And so we need to eliminate food deserts, but through that, we need to create economic opportunities for people embedded within those communities. So I would say start there and kind of let things improve from there. But, you know, as you know, as a doctor, like, you know, your diet is so important. And if you live in an area where you just cannot, you know, make better, healthier choices, then your health is going to decline over time, you know, far faster than in these other neighborhoods where there's plentiful, you know, fruits and vegetables and other things. And so I would say, you know, the food ecosystem, including access to information about the best foods and kind of how to choose and, you know, the portions and, you know, just advocating for people to drink more water, all these, like, so basically there's like an education component, there's an economic development component, but just really building that ecosystem of awareness around how important our diet is. I think that'll be a good first step on the prioritized list.
All right. Well, let's leave it there. Thank you so much for your work in the community. And I hope to see you in some of those multidisciplinary conversations about improving health outcomes and reducing disparities. So thanks so much for being here today.
Yeah, good to be here. Please invite me to those conversations and I will gladly show up when I can.
That was Kimberly Dowdell, architect, who gives us her ideas and her insights about how we can get some of our underserved communities to have more birthdays. Thanks for listening to the Grapevine Health Podcast. Our producer is Nicholas Elias. Please like us on social media. You can find us at Grapevine Health on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, and on Twitter at Health Grapevine. Until next time, I'm Dr. Lisa, signing off.